but gave me a steady look and waited for me to say my line. "You're not the devil, are you?" I asked. The guy narrowed his eyes, already pissed at my inclusion in his world. "Scotch and soda," I said. He started to walk off to fill my order as quickly as he could and get back to the business of ignoring me. "Hey," I said. He sighed as he turned. "Hold the scotch." Anna was sitting in the hospital room beside Vigil's bed. She was curled up in her chair, legs folded up, reading a book on her tablet. She looked up and saw me in the doorway.
"Nathan," she said, standing, "you shouldn't be here. The Nightwise have guards posted to protect Vigil and Grinner. There are detection spells."
I pointed to the purple quartz fey bracelet wrapped tightly about my wrist. "We're clear, at least for a few minutes. This thing is powerful as hell."
She hugged me and kissed me. It felt sweet and soft and good. I pulled away. The last thing I deserved was comfort. "How is he? How is Grinner?"
Anna looked at me like she hardly recognized me.
"When was the last time you slept or ate? Your face is all bruised up. You look terrible."
"Anna, how are they?"
"Grinner was in surgery for 14 hours. They reattached everything. They will have to wait to see how much mobility he retains, if any. His wife, Christine, and baby got here in the middle of the night. They are in the ICU with him now. Would you like to see her?"
I rubbed my face. I felt very tired and a little dizzy.
"No, I can't." "Latham, whatever happened at that mansion, it's not your—"
"Don't," I said. "Please don't say that." Anna nodded. She took my hand. I nodded to Vigil. The Knight was covered in bandages, drains, and tubes, and was breathing with the help of a machine.
"How about him?"
She sighed and shrugged.
"He's a hard case," she said. "They pulled 9 magic bullets out of him. What do they call those damned things?"
"Rune bullets," I said. "Enchanted for maximum effect, maximum damage."
"Well, the doctors didn't know any of that, but they did say he was fighting very hard to stay alive. They said it's up to him now."
I nodded and headed back toward the door.
"Stay with him.
He doesn't have anyone else."
"Where are you going?"
I didn't answer her.
"Latham, where are you going?"
"Making this right," I said, "as right as I can. Tell Grinner and Christine I'm sorry. Tell him to take all the rest of the money out of the dummy accounts he's set up for me. It's his now." Anna shook her head slowly.
"No. No. You're not doing that. You're not going out in some stupid blaze of glory. I don't care if you believe it or not, but there are a lot of people who love you."
"I know," I said. "I'm doing this for them. No more people dying for me. No more people sacrificed on my altar. You tell Lauren..." I couldn't fit the words in my mouth. They were for real people. Real boys with a whole soul and no blood on their hands.
"Anna,"
she nodded.
"Come back and tell us. Tell us both."
"Hell, tell that fat sack of a hacker I'm sorry. There have been so few things in my life that were... real. You.
You were all real."
I walked through the halls of the Temple of Suffering, each room a gallery of pain. I stole a few things I'd need from a nurse's station and found my way outside. Theodore Ankou's eyes fluttered open. He was tangled in 1,500 thread-count Egyptian cotton sheets. His hotel suite window burned from the light of 1,000,000 counterfeit stars in the heart of the city. My hand was on his throat. His eyes snapped a full predatory awareness, obviously shocked that I had been able to sneak up on him to get this close. He was about to shrug off his mortal guise and send me flying across the room when he felt the hypodermic needle resting against the plump, pulsing jugular vein in his neck.
"So, Mr. Ballard,"
he whispered, careful to not move too suddenly against the needle.
"To soothe your damaged ego at your failure to keep poor dead Can safe, you are now the Avenger, is that it? Pathetic. Didn't you learn anything from my little lesson? You did what you always do. You kept yourself alive, hale and hearty. You preserved your legend, even if good people had to die to do it.
Yeah, I said, I did, and you're right, I've done it before, screwed over people, had them die so I didn't have to. It's funny, there was a time, it seems like a million lives ago, when I would rather die than do something like that. What happened to that me? Was he real? Is this me real? So, you see, your lesson was more of a refresher course than a revelation, Theo. I wanted to thank you properly for it all the same.
My men are trained to sense a whisper of power, a hushed word, even a violent thought. They will be in here any moment, he said. Now they won't, I said. I killed them.
Karen had a little gift from her mother, an artifact from the old country. It hides one from scrying and detection spells very well. They never knew what hit them, just like you, Theo. You're alone with an unwashed, savage ape at your throat. How does that feel? I want to know.
Anku swallowed hard, and his arteries squirmed against the surgical steel of the needle. He was sweating a little, too.
You think I'll behave as you did? I am Fay, a superior being. How do you know that manticore venom will even affect me?
If it didn't turn you into a vegetable, you'd have become a hurricane and shredded me by now, I said. You wouldn't be sweating. You wouldn't be afraid.
If you leave now, I'll pay you what you're due for the service you rendered me, Anku said.
You wouldn't be bargaining, would you? I said. Anger darkened his eyes, but the fear remained.
I have money, he said. A large amount. Bearer bonds in a case with me. In the safe, in this room, it's been enchanted to destroy everything in the safe unless the proper code is entered as the password. You can't magically bypass it. I'll give it all to you if you leave me unmolested.
Combination, I said. Anku's face changed, just slightly.
He felt on steadier control now, was using me again as it should be.
How do I know you won't inject me and then just take the money?
How do I know you won't kill me the second I take this hypo away?
I give you my word, he said. I swear upon the singing star of the first world. I swear upon my family name. What assurance can you give me that is worth anything to you, Ballard?
I thought for a moment, then I said, I swear on the soul of your daughter. You have my word on Cairn's soul.
Anku was silent for a moment.
You thought she was your salvation, didn't you? Thought that if she could leave behind all her pain and all her failures, you could too. She climbed out of the pit, so you thought you could as well. She was your hope. I see. Very sentimental, very in keeping with who you are. Very well on Cairn's soul.
He gave me the combination to the safe. I felt him relax a little, the tension of his demise leaving him with my payoff.
You didn't have to kill her, I said, my voice cold shale. Why did you? It was always my intent, Anku said. She would never give me the air I needed, never submit to her proper place in the scheme of things. And she had tainted her womb with human seed, produced a half-breed bastard as the only one to carry on my family name, and another abomination stewing in her belly. Disgusting! The thought of my blood out in the monkey world being diluted down to nothing. No! You are a prideful man. You understand, even if you wish you didn't. No, Mr. Ballard, you were always to be the instrument of her death. I just had to embellish it for you, appeal to your tattered illusion of being a good man, of being the hero.
I gestured with my free hand. Sit, manners, Maya. The closet opened, the wall panel slid aside, and the proper buttons on the keypad pushed themselves. There was a soft electronic beep, and the safe door swung open as well.
No, your turn,
Anku said. Yeah, I said. My turn. I slid the needle into his neck and pushed the plunger down hard. Anku began to try to sit up. He made a faint popping sound in his throat like he was fighting to get air and slumped back onto the bed.
I want the last thing you can comprehend to be this, I said. You plan to hunt that little boy down and kill him as easily as you killed Cairn.
Anku's form shivered between his mortal self and his true fey nature, like a switch was being flipped by some mad, spasming god, snapping him back and forth between his real self and the diminished mortal illusion.
I gave her my word, too, I said. That didn't work out too good for her, either.
The fey lord's polychromatic eyes dimmed and rolled back in his skull as his body thrashed, fighting the invading poison. Drool spilled from his mouth, gasping like a fish out of water.
You're right, I'm a son of a bitch, I said.
You reminded me there's a cost to trying to play at being anything else. He shriveled back into his mortal guise and lay on the bed shuddering with each breath.
As to breaking my word, fey have no souls for me to swear on. Everything Cairn was is gone now, thanks to you. And when you leave this world after however long you exist in that tortured prison of a body, you will be scattered on the wind, gone forever. I wanted those to be the last words in your ear that made any sense to you, as your brain was set on fire. You fucked with the wrong monkey, Theo.
Anku made a whistling noise and his eyes rolled wildly around, searching, fighting to remain still, to focus on anything. He was gone.
Nice doing business with you, Lord Anku, I said, dropping the empty needle on the edge of his bed. Enjoy your early retirement.
26. It took me a day to find the old ranch in Leucadia that had belonged to Joey's late uncle. The hunt was complicated by the fact. I didn't know Joey's last name or his uncle's. I knew Cairn's son, Garland, was named after the dead man, but that was it. I decided not to use magic to find Garland because the Dugpa or the Nightwise were out there, sniffing for him and for me. A shiver of power, especially for me, might catch their attention. The Fey artifact, Cairn's mother's necklace, was hiding me quite effectively, and I saw no reason to do anything to change that. I figured I had given House and Ku enough to keep them busy, so I didn't worry about them making this more of a clusterfuck than it already was. The scant intel I had would have been more than enough for Grinner to find the place, but Grinner was down, maimed. I searched the old way, the hard way. I did title searches at the county courthouse, looking for any Garlands, or even the first initial G. I looked for properties, maybe far behind on their property taxes, just scraping by. I also looked for transfers of property within families, and finally for condemned properties in Encinitas. Then I drove around, talked to farmers, ranchers, surfers, convenience store clerks, even a few wandering cops. I had lies for all of them. I finally found it on a lonely, rocky, wooded lot off East Neptune Avenue. It was a run-down California-style beach house. The yard was kept up somewhat, but just on the verge of being overgrown. It was off from the road a bit, with walls of foliage separating it from its more affluent peers, taking up the better part of a large corner lot. The whole neighborhood was a mixture of wealth, middle-class, retirees, and blue-collar. The late Uncle Garland's house probably saw its heydays in the late 60s, when this area was most likely more working class and surfer. After scouting around a bit, I found a 7-Eleven. I thought about calling Dwayne for some backup and muscle in case things got rough. Then Grinner and Vigil punched my memory, and I decided if it got rough, I'd deal with it on my own. I also considered buying a 40 of some malt liquor. I managed to pass that up, too, but it was even harder. No fuck-ups, not now. Too many sharks circling. I came back after dark to the old house. There were no cars parked in the driveway that wound up the hill, no lights on in any of the windows. In fact, no indication of active electricity or habitation at all as I drove by. I parked Anku's stolen sports car down Neptune and walked back up, heading into the brush at the edge of the wooded lot about a half acre from the ramshackle house. Skirting through the darkness of the stand of trees, I could hear the ocean waves off to my left and below the cliffs. Stray gulls, hurrying home after dark, challenged the surf's roar with their lonely screeches. I could smell fresh mint and sea salt. I felt my body relax in spite of itself. Duane would have moved through the lot without making a sound, like poison thought. I am not Duane. Still, I've done my share of B&Es in my time, and I managed to get close enough to the edge of the tree line to see the dark house and the backyard without tripping and falling on my face or making too much noise. I sat on a stump and watched for a while. Nothing. Dark on dark. Occasionally light and shadow thrown off Neptune from the distant street on the other side of the house would twist into view as a car turned and its lights grazed the house for a moment. As my eyes adjusted to the darkness, I saw what I suspected was a path off to my left that started in the backyard and most likely led down through the rocky slope to the beach at my back. If you spend enough time waiting and watching, your internal clock gets pretty accurate, especially when you've been sober for days. My best guess was that it was 9 o'clock now. No signs of any activity, any life. I had deliberately avoided buying cigarettes at the 7-Eleven, so I couldn't be overcome by the urge I was having right now for a smoke. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe Joey wasn't pushing his luck twice. He may have bundled Garland up and took off in a car headed for anywhere but here. That's what I'd do, run like hell and keep running. That's a hell of a way to raise a kid, though, and Garland would be reeling from the death of his mother. Shit, I didn't know. I couldn't take care of myself, let alone a kid. I wasn't sure what he'd do. This was just my best hunch and my last scrap of a clue in this long trail that started in Greece. A slit of soft yellow light appeared at the edge of one of the back windows just for a second. There were thick blankets hung over all the windows, and someone had opened one just to peek. I stood up, my knees creaking a bit as I did. Okay, maybe risk an invisibility spell to... I saw white light behind my eyes as the blow caught me in the back of the skull. I went down, face first into the dirt and leaves. I rolled over to see a 12-gauge combat shotgun pointed at me. The man behind the gun had a grim, tired face and long dreadlocks. He was dressed in a black T-shirt, black hoodie, and jeans. I recognized him from the picture Cairn had shown me. It was Joey. "How many with you?" he muttered quietly. "Just me," I said. "I'm not with Anku. I'm not with anyone. I'm here to help you and your son." "Bullshit," he said. "How did you find us?" "I spoke with Cairn before she died. I was hired by Anku to find her, but after I talked to her and saw Garland, I couldn't. He must have had me followed or something. I tried to stop what happened, but I was too late. I want to help you. I swear it." "You're lying," Joey said. "Get your ass up. We're walking inside. I don't want to make a lot of noise out here, but you try anything and I'll cut you in half." I nodded and got to my feet with a groan. As I stood, I threw a handful of sand and dirt into Joey's eyes. I pushed his arms and the gun down toward the ground as I drove a forearm into his face. I felt his nose break and followed the arm bar with a southpaw uppercut. He fell down on his ass, dropping the shotgun. I picked it up and aimed it at him. Joey looked more scared than anything, and I knew it was for his son in the house, not for himself. "Sorry about the nose," I said. "Yeah, I am lying. The truth is, Anku threatened to do worse than kill me, and I told him where to find Cairn. I was chicken shit, trying to save my own ass. I'd say I'm sorry, but I figured that would be like spitting on her and the baby's grave." The sadness and the anger warred in his eyes. "I'm here to help you, Joey, you and Garland. I took care of Anku, but that fucked up cult that you got Cairn away from in L.A., they want Garland, and I'll be damned if I let them get him. I've got some money, a lot of money, and some fake IDs for both of you. A friend of mine cooked them up before I nearly got him killed. They're good enough to get you two into Mexico through TSA to anywhere. I'm here to help, I swear it." I dropped the shotgun at Joey's feet.
You want to kill me? I wouldn't blame you. If you do punch my ticket, the car keys in my pocket are to a Trevita parked about 4 blocks down. There's a case in the car with the bearer bonds and the IDs. Hell, keep the car, too. Anko won't be needing it.
Joey got to his feet. He wiped the blood from his broken nose. He left the shotgun in the dirt.
We weren't there, he said, more to the night than to me. I wasn't there. We had a stupid argument about fucking dishwasher detergent. Can you imagine that shit? Goddamn soap. I was tired and I didn't want to go get it, and she said she wouldn't. I got pissed and we yelled at each other and I headed out the door, and Garland. Hell, Garland, he wanted to ride along with his daddy. So the last thing I said to her was, be right back, and I slammed the fucking door. She was the best thing that ever came into my fucked up life, and I wasn't there to help her, to save her. I let her slip away, not knowing how much I loved her, thinking I was pissed at her. Goddamn soap.
She knew. She told me, I said. I know that doesn't mean shit right now, but maybe one day you'll feel it. She loved you. You were her hero. You saved her life a long time ago. Don't forget that.
Joey picked up the shotgun. Come on, he said. Let's get Garland and get the hell out of here.
We broke the tree line and entered the backyard. Garland was standing next to a plastic jungle gym designed to look like a treehouse with a slide. The boy was in an old, faded, and too big L.A. Lakers jersey over footy pajamas.
Dad,
the boy said.
They're coming. Hi, Ballard.
Who, son? Joey asked, looking around.
Bad men,
the boy said.
Real bad men.
I opened my ajna, my third eye, and I sensed them, too.
The Dugpa, I said to Joey, coming from the beach. I knelt by Garland and unwrapped Karen's purple quartz bracelet from my wrist. I put it around the boy's neck like a choker.
Garland, this was your mama's, and her mama's before that. H from Fairy. Did your mom tell you about the First World? He nodded as he examined the jewelry. It's powerful, I said. It'll hide you from hollow men, from bad people looking for you with the sight, what you and your mama have. Never take it off. You hear me? You never take this away from your skin, and you stick close to your dad.
The boy looked at me with large, wise eyes and nodded. They were Karen's eyes. I stood and turned to Joey.
You two get in the house. Hide.
You'll need help, he said. That shotgun won't make a difference. I said, your son needs you. If anything happens to me, Garland will know. If it does, you make a run for the car. Get the fuck out of the country and do it fast. You hear?
Joey nodded and led his son toward the back door of the dark house. The boy looked back at me, and then they both disappeared inside. I cleared the cobwebs of pain and fear from my body with some cleansing breaths and ran toward the beach down the old worn path through the stand of trees. I cleared the tree line and found myself at the edge of the rocky cliff. There were old, worn concrete stairs with rusted metal rails that led down to the rocky beach below. The moon was hidden behind clouds, and I could sense that Will had placed those clouds there, so I brushed them aside.
Iam Solari, Tesseri Sororis, I whispered, and the bright, pilfered light of the moon came out of hiding and illuminated the sea and the beach. There were six men. They had landed in a large rubber raft with a muffled outboard motor on it. The raft had been dragged onto the land. All the men wore black tactical gear, black ski masks, and night vision goggles that made them look vaguely insect-like as they spread across the beach, moving toward the cliff face and the stairs. They were all armed. A second raft with six more assassins was closing with the shore. As the accusing moonlight pinned them, I pulled energy from the air, sifting it through my seething Muladhara lens, and gestured downward as the waters roughened and the dark clouds swirled. Ignis, Kaylee, Ardebit, Inimikos, Mios, I called up to the winds, even as the men heard me and raised their weapons. Lightning, like an angry serpent, crashed down from the sky. It struck and killed two of the men, tossing their bodies into the air. I felt another's magic deflect my lightning and send it dancing across the now choppy ocean until it dispersed. Shit, was all I had time to say as I scrambled back away from the edge of the cliff toward the trees. There was a hiss and whine of angry bullets as the surviving killers and the landing occupants of the second raft fired their silenced weapons up the cliff at me. I felt a hot iron burn itself into my shoulder with the force of a freight train. I fell back onto the ground from the shot. Before I had time to regroup, I felt the mystical attack on top of me. Foul, poisoned, Manipura-driven force engulfed me and tried to smother me, snuff out my life force. It was brazen, reckless magic, driven by a level of power I had seldom encountered in a mortal magician. My first instinct was an animal one, to shake myself loose, but I quickly sensed, as my lungs began to seize, that was exactly what my opponent wanted me to do, and the spell coiled tighter about my aura, like a massive python of black, cracking energy. I was on the ground, struggling to breathe, to stay conscious, and I knew the Dugpa's assassins were hustling up the stairs while their patron kept me busy. I had less than a minute until they could pump my twitching body full of bullets and then move against Joey and Garland. No, that was not going to happen, damn it. I forced my body, my instincts, to shut the fuck up. I accepted the spell, its twisted harmony, its mad entropy. I let the monster play. If it killed me, it killed me. If this was my last breath, then it was. There was no future, no next. There was pure crystalline breath, the mind of the infinite, the sun radiating from my core. The coils of the spell loosened. I was water. I became my Svadhisthana chakra, pure life force, pure, clean, fluid, slowly eroding the hungry, insistent magic wanting to devour me. I let it devour me, and in doing so, I devoured it. I slipped loose from the spell. It was a hell of a trap, and it had been built just for me. My life force, my soul, was my weakest spot and the last thing I would have ever relied on to overcome such an attack. Another few seconds of resisting and I'd be dead. As it was, I was feeling pretty rough as I crouched. I saw the masked face of the first Dugpa to reach the top of the stairs. I let the monster slither away and guided it toward the killer. He seized and fell back down the stairs as the spell devoured him. I heard his companions shout as he crashed into them. He was no wizard, and he had no mystic Aikido to employ against the black tantric spell. I placed my hand on the ground and anchored myself, becoming the earth. I sent pulse after pulse of root Muladhara energy through the cliff. My head swam from the concussion I was pretty sure Joey had given me when he cock-colded me with the shotgun. My lungs burned and my body ached from the spell I had narrowly escaped. What I was trying to do now, most wizards in the world, in history, couldn't do on the fly. The enormity of it threatened to eclipse my mind, my will. Too big. It's too big. But not my fucking ego. I am Latham motherfucking Ballard, and I am the greatest wizard to ever stride this earth. I am an ass-kicking pillar of salt-turning motherfucking god, a goddamn rock star. I'm fucking Tulsa Doom with a better agent. The immovable object quivered, shook. I stalled. It was too big. It was too much. The next Dukpa's head came into view, then his chest, his raised gun. There was another appearing behind him, and another after that. All black-clad like the night itself was sending its army to kill me, to kill Garland. Garland, his eyes, his mother's eyes. You are all that stands between that little boy who never hurt a soul and the hungry night. You're it. If you die, they take him. I was no rock star, sure as fuck, no god. I was a tired, guilty, selfish old man running from his fears, from his failures. I was ready. This was as good as it was going to get. That boy was going to live a good life, and that was worth the bad one I had wasted. I released a single breath, felt my Sahasrara chakra take over, gently pushing instead of violently pulling. I begged instead of ordered, and I felt the world open and yield, felt the other mages attempt to stop what I was doing crumble like a sandcastle. A large section of the rocky cliff face, including the stairs, collapsed, crashing and tumbling down on the beach below. I heard the shouts and screams of the Dugpa assassins as they fell, and then only the sound of the settling earth and the relentless waves. I stood, shaking, My whole body felt twitchy and weak, as if I had physically pushed the weight. Each breath was far. It was only then that I realized I had been hit again. I was bleeding from my chest as well as from my shoulder. I walked back to the edge of the cliff, carefully looking over the side. I got dizzy for a second, but didn't fall. Couldn't fall. Below, there were boulders and debris everywhere along the beach. In the silver light, bodies were scattered about the rock slide, unmoving. The two rafts sat alone at the edge of the encroaching sea. That was easier than I thought it. The Dugpa work through misdirection. They never come at you straight on.
Damn it, I said. I immediately started hacking for my effort. My lungs felt like they were made of molten lead. I couldn't get a good breath. My cough brought up bright red blood. I sped over the cliff and headed back toward the house and the yard as quickly as I could. The back door was locked. I kicked it open and nearly puked and passed out from my effort. I stumbled into the nearly demolished 1950s-style kitchen. Cabinet doors were reduced to splinters, their hinges partly melted as if by terrible heat. The oven was crushed, crumpled like a tin can. Every drawer had launched itself across the room, and the cracked, stained tile floor was littered with old rusted cutlery and now fat, dark drops of my blood. Some of the knives and forks were impaled in the walls, still vibrating from the impact. "Joey!" I called out as I moved through the debris and into the darkness of the hall connected to the kitchen. "Garland!" The house was cold, colder than outside, and the place smelled of stale piss and something else, something familiar to some corner of my awareness. I saw scraps of light ahead, hidden under thick plastic shower curtains hung before a doorway. I pushed the curtain aside, focusing my strained concentration, raising my defenses, preparing to fight. The living room was lit by several battery-powered lanterns. Joey braced against the wall, his body partly hidden by shadow. He was panting and wincing in pain, bleeding from a deep, ugly gut wound. I turned and saw Garland, his face slack with fear, and before the boy, in the harsh LED light, was Crash Cart, its multiple cabled arms sprouting scalpels and whirring circular bone saws, dripping with Joey's blood. It turned its mangled half-face toward me, and beneath the blood-clotted surgical mask, I thought I saw it grin. Two of the tulpa's oil and blood-slick tentacles were obscenely wrapped around the boy's chest, but it hadn't hurt him. Joey struggled to bend over and pick up the still-smoking shotgun off the floor. Its barrel had been cut in two. "You can't have him," the father growled, fighting to hold his insides in. Garland looked to me, pleading. Everything was dimming. I could hear my blood swelling in my veins and my skull. I fought to remain present in this nightmare.
"Glad to see you still on your feet, Ballard,"
Brett Glide said, stepping into the light.
"Better late than never, I always say."
The Dugpa was dressed all in black, like his men on the beach.
"Those were some impressive workings back on the beach. You are as good as they say you are. Almost as good as you think you are. Even if you have mastered the technique to keep Crash Cart from affecting you, the boy and his father are not so lucky, and you're barely on your feet."
"Still got a little hitch in my giddy-up," I said, filling my body with Manipura energy.
"Unless you want what your boys on the beach got, big kahuna, you call off your monster, leave the boy be."
"Wow," Glide said, smiling and shaking his head. I wanted a kick in his perfect teeth.
"I have to tell you, you got style. I'll give you points for that. Bleeding out, exhausted, and beat to hell, and you still act like you're going to win this. God, it's a shame you didn't join us."
"You wouldn't have liked it if I had," I said. "I would have gotten rid of you and your batshit crazy-ass stepdad day one." Glide chuckled. "Runs in the blood, I guess. Face as fucked up as his old man. I had a nice long chat with step-granddad in the joint."
"My grandfather is a prophet, a messiah," Glide said, some of the fake Hollywood smile sliding off his face. "You don't deserve to breathe the same air as he."
"To be honest, Brett, I didn't want to. Manson could have used a shower, or some patchouli, the hippie stuff, maybe a little for breeze at least."
Shut your fucking sewer of a mouth, you old fucking relic, Glide shouted, the facade gone. He was red-faced with rage, and his voice made Garland jump. Crash Cart's arms slid more tightly around the boy like snakes covered in blood clots. I held up a hand to Glide.
Mellow, dude, mellow, I said. Your karma is already fucked up pretty good. No need to push it to 11.
Glide got a grip on himself. I could feel his defenses wavering a bit as he attempted to chill. If Garland wasn't in the line of fire, I would have gone for it then. Glide patted down his hair and put his smiling mask back on.
Garland?
Glide said to the boy in his best hippie Mr. Rogers voice.
My name is Brett, and you're going to come with Crash Cart and me now.
It will all be okay, son, I promise.
We're going to take you somewhere safe,
where you will be loved and cared for, and in time all these nightmares from before will fade away.
Damn you, Glide, Joey said, forcing himself to stand.
He was soaked in blood, sweating, fighting to stay conscious. It was pure love, pure desire to save his son that was keeping him from dropping.
You leave him alone, you son of a bitch, or I'll kill you.
He took a step away from the blood-painted wall toward the Dugpa.
Garland,
he collapsed, unmoving.
Do you like Xbox?
Glide said to the boy. You can have every Xbox game they ever made, and some special ones, too, just for you, programmed by some of my family. Garland looked to me.
Bad man,
the boy said, nodding at Glide.
Yep,
I said, very, very bad. He's talking about you forgetting your mom and dad, kid. I grunted as I knelt to look Garland eye to eye. I sat on the floor, cross-legged in a full lotus position, ignoring the screaming pain in my chest as I folded my legs. I almost passed out, but I didn't.
Don't worry, Garland. You and your dad are going to walk out of here, and I'm going to make the bad man and the monster go away, and you're going to help me.
Glide chuckled.
You really need to rein in that ego, Ballard. It's over. You've got nothing left.
Garland, if you come with me right now, we'll get your daddy some help. Get him to a hospital, to a doctor.
You don't want daddy to die like mommy did, do you?
It would be your fault if you didn't come along willingly right now.
You don't want to kill daddy, do you, buddy?
Look at me, I said.
My fingers were already beginning to make the motions, the complex new mudras I hadn't had much of a chance to practice. They had to be perfect for this to work. My form had to be perfect. No goddamn DT shakes, no fear, no pain. Perfect, or the boy was gone.
Just once, just goddamn once, don't fuck it up.
Ignore him, kid. He's the fucking boogeyman. He can't hurt you or your dad. Neither can that ugly, gross thing holding you. See, the hollow man wants you to give in to him yourself. It gives him more power. An old crash cart here, well, he really is just a bad dream. We can take him, kid. Look at me. Listen to me.
I'm sorry to say.
You're killing your daddy, Garland, Glide said. I could feel him building a working aimed right at me.
This old bum. He's lying to you.
He doesn't want to help you.
He got your mommy killed.
Garland looked at me, and I saw the doubt enter those young old eyes. I completed the first key, and my fingers began the second series of mudras. The twisting and the shaping of my fingers was even more difficult than the first. I kept working, and I matched the little boy's gaze. It was harder than I thought it would be. I thought about my grandmother. How she used to talk to me when I wasn't much older than Garland, her gentle voice, her kindness, and most of all, her honesty. I tried to think what Granny would say. I messed up, I said. I got scared, and I did something bad because I was scared. Your mom got hurt, got killed because I messed up, Garland. I'm sorry.
Mama said you were her friend. It was okay that you're sad inside.
The child with Cairn's eyes said to me as sagely as any guru, as any mystic master I had ever met. Mama told me, it's okay. She told me, we all get scared and we all mess up sometimes. We just gotta try again to do good. Mama was sad inside too for a long time. She messed up too, but she said me and Dad made her happy inside again. She told me after you left that she could see the good in you, trying to peek out from all that sad and bad. She liked you, Ballard.
I liked her too, I said. I was almost done with the second key. My fingers were flying. If I hadn't fucked it up, this should get Brett's attention. I couldn't fuck this up.
I need you to think of your mama right now, kid. See her. Don't close your eyes. Don't be afraid of the monster or the bad man. Think about all the good things about your mama. See her.
Okay, this is too fucking sweet for words, Glad said. And you think I'm smarmy? Please. Say night, night, old man.
He raised his hand to obliterate me with a channel of Muladhara energy. I completed the second key and my hands came together steepled with a too loud clap. A halo of violet light surrounded Garland and it slowly drifted away from him as it grew larger, shifted in shape, and began to take on substance.
What did you do?
Glad said, incredulous as it finally began to comprehend what I had been working at. Crimson energy flared like a bloody star from his hand straight toward my heart. A slender, pale hand stopped it harmlessly, refracted it into a million shards of twinkling, jeweled light. The hand was connected to a wrist crisscrossed with old scars. Garland looked up into the fading lavender light and smiled into the face of his mother.
It's all right, Garland,
the tulpa of Cairn Anku said as she effortlessly pulled crash cart slipper steel cables away from Garland.
Mama's going to make the bad dream go away now.
The tiny little fae girl shoved back the hulking stainless steel nightmare and crash cart smashed back into a wall, sending down a rain of plaster dust and debris.
That's not possible, Glad said as he slipped to the floor and assumed a Burmese position. His fingers linked and began to shift and move frantically. It took my father years, me decades, to master the formation formulas to build a tulpa. How could you?
Your granddad, Chuck, taught me in one day, I said, for a carton of smokes. I've always been a quick learner, at least as far as magic goes. Glad was working to strengthen Crash Cart's physicality in the waking world. He was working off stale formula and rote visualization. Cairn's projection was fueled by the dynamo of a child's imagination and a son's love. Crash Cart tried to roll back toward the boy, and Cairn stopped him cold with one hand on his box-like chest. The nightmare began to become a little blurry at the edges.
Leave my family alone, she said,
a fierceness set in her jaw. I saw Joey's head come up, the look of amazement on his face. I shouted to him even as I began a new combination of mudras, a riff off what Manson had taught me, an improvisation. It was something else I was actually kind of good at, one of the few things. Joey, think of Cairn, remember her, all your love, all your memories, now! Cairn became even more substantial, more solid. The detail of her face, her clothes, everything brightened and sharpened, even his crash cart was losing detail. I completed my new mudra just as the monstrous tulpa rolled away from Cairn, who now was radiant in all her true fae glory, beautiful, powerful, a goddess protecting her child. At my direction, Crash Cart grabbed Brett off the floor, gathering him up in his viscous tendrils. The Dugpa screamed and struggled in shock and horror.
No. No. What are you doing? Stop! You can't do this! I'm your master!
Glad shouted as Crash Cart wrapped the black tantric wizard tighter in his inhuman embrace. The horrible, mangled head turned in my direction. Eyes, one leaking bloody jelly, the other a metal and glass lens embedded in meat, regarded me.
Go back where you came from, I said to Crash Cart. Take him with you. He's yours now. The outline of a smile again under the stained, bloody mask. The wall behind the tulpa folded in upon itself, a toothed maw gnawing a hole into our world. The last of Charles Manson's living nightmares rolled backward into the festering wound in space, one of its rubber wheels squeaking and shaking as it did. It dragged Brett Glide, a.k.a. Brett Winder, into its realm. The place behind our eyelids we thrash and struggle to flee in deepest sleep. Brett begged, and when begging did nothing, he cursed my name with the last shreds of sanity his charred soul possessed. The mouth closed and became just a wall again. The stench of rancid blood and engine oil faded. Cairn's tulpa became her mortal self again. She knelt down and pulled Garland tight.
Mama, you a ghost?
The boy asked.
Can you stay with us? Oh, baby, Mama's a memory now, Cairn said. And I'll be with you every day, all day. Anytime you need me, you remember. I'll be there. But I'll miss you, Mama.
Garland's voice was quavering.
I miss your kisses and your hugs and it's not fair. It is fair, she said. I know it doesn't make sense to you now, baby boy, but it will in time.
The child hugged the tulpa with all his might. Tears ran down son and mother's faces.
It will in time, baby.
I groaned as I made my way to my feet. I was really dizzy from losing blood. I managed to help Joey up, and we leaned on each other like two staggering drunks. Joey wrapped his arms around his son and his dead wife. They held each other, never wanting the next moment to come, never wanting this sliver of time to end. Cairn kissed her little boy on the head and her husband on the lips. She looked over to me, and that same sad, almost pitying look she had given me only a couple days ago was on her face.
Thank you for this, she said. You gave me a chance to say goodbye. You did right by me. By them.
She kissed Joey again on the cheek.
Please get him to a hospital.
I will, I said and stepped away. I knew what was happening and I knew she didn't have long.
I love you, Joey said. I'm sorry I got mad at Cairn kissed him again to quiet him. You know in your heart how much I love you, she said. You are the only man who ever kept all his promises to me. I want you to be happy and take care of our boy. I know you will. I love you, Joey, and I always will.
Garland was crying, the sob shaking his whole body. Cairn lifted him into her arms and wiped the tears away.
Don't go, Mama, please. We don't get a say in that, Garland, Cairn said, kissing his eyes and tickling his tummy. Don't let that make you sad or angry inside, honey. Please try. Life's beautiful, and it's a present. Every day you're here. Mama wishes she had more time with you and Daddy, too, but I'm so grateful for every second I had with you. Think about what you have, Garland, not what you lose.
Again, my grandmother's words in my ears. I understood Garland's panic, his fear, and how that simmering fear could boil into a lifetime of anger and resentment. I wish I had listened harder to what Granny had tried to teach me.
Promise, Mama, you'll try to not get sad inside. It's okay to be sad inside sometimes, but don't let it eat you up, baby. You end up hollow, and Mama never wants that for you. I promise, Mama,
Garland said, wiping his own tears away. He hugged her neck tightly. I knew he was smelling her hair, trying to remember every bit of this moment to sustain him for the long years to come.
Daddy will help you, she said. And Ballard, too. They'll be there for you when it gets hard, and they'll understand.
Cairn kissed her boy one last time and set him down. She was already fading, losing detail. Garland clung to his father's leg and hip.
He didn't seem to notice the blood. Joey didn't seem to feel his wounds in this moment. Karen became caught in a swirling mass of tiny indigo lights like fireflies as the tulpa continued to fade away. "I'll find you in dreams," Karen Anku said to her family. "I love you, too. You're the best thing that ever happened." She was so thin now you could see through her like glass. "To me?" She was gone. Her two men, Joey and Garland, stood silently, lost in their thoughts and their pain.
"Your mom's right," I said to the boys I picked him up. "Don't let all that yucky bad stuff stay in you, kid. You'll end up like that asshole, that bad man, Brett."
"Is that what happened to you?" Garland asked, sliding one arm around my neck.
"Something like that," I said. "Don't end up like me. Be like your mom."
"Mom liked you," he said. "I like you too, but you smell like smoke."
The kid scrunched up his face and pinched his nose.
"Yuck."
I looked at Joey. "You can walk a little farther?"
"Yeah,"
he said.
"Thank you." "You never have to thank me for a damn thing," I said. "Come on, let's get you some help. I know a street doc that can patch us both up."
We made our way back through the wrecked kitchen and out the broken back door. I was still carrying Garland in spite of the pain and the dizziness, just a little farther. All three of us stopped at what was waiting for us in the yard. I counted at least 10 of them that I could see, the whole contingent here in L.A. The most powerful wizards in all the worlds. They all had spells ready, boiling at the tips of their fingers. I could sense them and their energies now, since Gita was dropping the masking glamour she had been running to keep me from sensing their approach. Dragon was at Gita's side. To everyone else, she might look pissed, but I knew Lauren better than most, and she was dying inside with sadness and conflict.
"Latham Ballard," Gita said, "you are under arrest by the order of the Nightwise for your heinous crimes within our city. By the power of the Silver Seals and the compact of Shiva, by the sacrifice of the Bodhisattva, by the sacred saint Alice Weinstein of Fort Worth, Texas, destroyer of monsters and the guardian of life, by the court of the uncountable stairs, you are bound to stand down."
"I didn't kill those women," I called out to the faceless shadows of my mage peers, ready to destroy me if I made a false move. "You know that, Gita."
"You'll get to have your say at the tribunal prior to execution or banishment," Gita said calmly. "Now, step away from the boy and his father. I'll make sure they are cared for."
"The hell you will," I said. I looked at Dragon. "The Maven is part of the Dukpa cult that has been operating under your noses for a long, long time. They have been committing the ritual murders, and she's been covering for them since before she became Maven. She sold you out!"
Dragon's frown deepened. There was a murmur from the assembled Nightwise, but not a single destructive spell wavered in its focus on me.
"Ballard, you're not helping yourself here,"
Lauren said.
My former partner took a step toward me.
"You're injured. Badly. Release those two so they don't get hurt in this. You need to come along quietly."
"Never a day in my life, darling," I said to Dragon. "Handing Joey and Garland over to the Maven is the same as giving them to the Dukpa."
I turned and handed Garland to Joey, who held his son tightly despite how much of his own life was leaking out of him by the minute.
"If this gets ugly, you two run," I said softly. I moved so that father and son were at my back.
"Yes, the mythical Dukpa cult," Gita said. "The one you and Roland Blue participated in since you were one of us before your fall."
"The one you covered up for me and Nico," I said, "and then from Dragon, from all of the Nightwise. The one you are a high-ranking member of, Maven. The one that used Roland Blue as an agent in the life. Didn't you guys ever wonder why in all the years Blue's been in business you were never able to nail him, shut him down? He was protected by the Maven." Don't listen to him. It was my old buddy Luke from the elevator. His partner Bridget was also in the crowd, targeting me with a deadly spell, a look of predatory anticipation on her face. Ballard's a fraud, a con man. He attacked me and Bridget. He's as dirty as they come. I swear I'm telling the truth. I give my word. I regretted it as soon as I said it. Your word? Bridget sneered. Everyone here knows what your word, your oath, is worth. You betrayed the order, and now you're trying to hustle us to get away with murder.
Your reputation does make it hard for you to be believed, Latham,
Geeta said.
You were driven from our number because of the things you'd done, the compromises you made. You have reveled in your debauchery and your delinquent behavior your whole life. Everyone knows that. You are no longer Nightwise, Latham Ballard, no longer one of us. You have no code, no honor. You no longer live by the brilliant badge, nor can you even summon it. You don't stand for the weak and the innocent. You prey on them, hurt them, and now you're under arrest.
The shadow of a smug smile crossed Gita's face for just a second. Only I saw it.
I'm sorry, Latham.
I felt them all preparing, waiting for me to stand down or to fight. I'd die. There was no hustle, no shit I could pull out of my ass here. I'd die, Joey would die, in Garland. I looked back at the boy, and he looked at me with eyes as big as an owl's. They were his mother's eyes, too. I raised my hand. I thought of Garland, of Joey, of Peggy, of Grinner, of Jane Doe, of all the Jane Does, and most of all of Cairn's sweet, sad, crystal myth Cairn. I took the bitterness of my failures and I hammered them about me like armor. I have made so many mistakes, authored so many tragedies. I have let so many people down. Not today, not the kid. Garland's words were in my mind as I sifted the formula, went through the roots of the simple ritual and laid myself bare before it in judgment. She told me we all get scared and we all mess up sometimes. We just got to try again to do good. I took a shaky, burning, painful breath, and I tried one more time to do good. The brilliant badge burned in the night, hovering above my hand. It was strong, and it was steady, and it did not waver. The light of it illuminated the faces of the circle of wizards, and I could see the shock on those faces. The best look of all was Gita's. I saw fear there, and maybe a little remorse, some sadness. Dragon smiled and walked away from the maven to stand by my side. She summoned the badge as well. One by one, each Nightwise called their badge to them, and the night was pushed back, held at bay by the joined radiance. Geeta stood alone now, circled by wizards, their spells leveled at her, not me. No badge hovered above her palm. She raised her hands in surrender. Her eyes never left me. You're under arrest, I said.
27. The waves reached for the heavens, then tumbled under their own weight, crashing, falling into white, hissing foam as they rushed across the wet sand. Garland laughed as the water tickled and pulled at his feet. The child squealed in delight, and some seagulls gave a shrill reply. The boy ran along the beach, and his father ran with him, playing tag with the endless ocean. Joey had lost some weight while he was in the hospital, but he looked good, and he scooped Garland up and spun him around. I stood at the rocky edge of the beach, which was off of 3rd Street in Encinitas. Vigil, finally up and out of the hospital himself, stood beside me, his arms crossed. I could feel Garland's aura reaching out, teasing at the water, at the gulls. The colors coming off him were brighter than the late morning sun. Garland saw us and called out to his dad, who set the boy back on the wet sand and then raced him to us. Garland won.
Ballard! Vigil!
Garland shouted as he crashed into our legs. Vigil held out a stabilizing hand to keep the little bundle of speed from falling on his ass.
Easy. Vigil said.
You'll knock us old men down.
The kid grinned, and I noticed he had lost another baby tooth.
That's quite a gap there,
Vigil said, kneeling to Garland's level.
Perhaps the tooth fairy will leave you a little something for that.
I snorted, and Burris looked up at me. Don't get me started on the tooth fairy, I said. When he's